Well, good morning. Good to see you all this morning. As we're almost to Christmas, it feels like we are, everything's piling up, Christmas cards going around, lots of Christmas songs, so I'm enjoying it. We have a program tonight, and so we have a lot going on, so we're looking forward to what God's going to do with it all. We're going to be in Jeremiah still this morning, Jeremiah chapter 43, and we're going to go through chapter 44 this morning. We're continuing on our story that has been going on for several chapters here as one continuous thread, which, as I mentioned a few weeks ago, is very unusual for the book of Jeremiah. Jeremiah likes to chop its stories up and put them next to each other by topic, not by chronology. And so to have this many chapters in a row all right next to each other is a luxury that we'll have to take advantage of while we're here. If you didn't get a handout, raise your hand. I want to make sure we have one for you. Our guys are in the back. If you didn't get one on your way in, good, very good. Thank you, guys. Jeremiah chapter 43, we're going to be starting. We continue this saga of these people's bright ideas of how to make everything go well. So Jeremiah has been preaching that the people are going to come and take them captive because of their sin and their spiritual adultery, and they didn't want to hear it, but it happened anyway. Because just because we don't like the truth doesn't mean the truth just goes away. And so they did. Babylon came. They took people captive on three separate occasions, and yet for some reason, even though it had already happened twice, the people were still under the impression that everything was just going to be okay because they wanted it to be. And that's not what God was telling them, and that's not what they wanted to believe. That's not what they wanted to hear. But eventually Babylon came the third time anyway and carried away the king, carried away the people captive, and then he left a small handful of people in the land to till the fields, to live in the houses, and to just kind of take care of it. There was no kingdom anymore, and there was no king. And so Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, appoints a governor, not a king, a governor in charge of Israel. And God tells the people, we're done. Just day and hang out. We're finished the judgment. Live in the land. Enjoy the land now. Do right in the future, but all the judgment is finished. Well, they don't want to believe that because they don't think it's true. So ironically, here we are, and the first time in the book of Jeremiah, their instruction is to do nothing. That's what they're supposed to do. Stay. But they can't handle that either, because they've been following their own opinions this whole time, and so they will continue to do so. And so a few chapters ago, we're introduced to Ishmael. Ishmael is just one of the men. He's of the seed royal. He would be the one who would be closest to the throne. And Nebuchadnezzar put a governor in charge who's like a grandson of a scribe. Who is this guy? And so he decides the best thing for his country. He gets in a league with Ammon, the nearby nation, and he assassinates the governor. But he ends up being an outcast. So his great plans of making things better, which was completely against God's word, didn't go well for him. But you have Johanan. There's another man. And he knows what's best for his country. He tells the governor, hey, he's going to come. He's going to assassinate you. You better be careful. The governor said it was fine, but it wasn't. And after this whole thing is over, Johanan raises an army. He pushes Ishmael out of the country. And Johanan says, this is a bad thing. We are stuck in a corner. The Babylon came, they put this guy in charge, and then as soon as we turn around, he's going to hear that he got assassinated by us. I mean, not by us, but by our people. So they're going to come back again, and they're going to take more people captive. We can't have this. We need to leave. So he gets all the people together, and he says, let's go to the safest place. We'll go to Egypt. But before we do, because we're spiritual people, we're going to go ask God what we're supposed to do. So he sends Jeremiah to go ask the Lord, are we supposed to go to Egypt? Obviously, we're supposed to go to Egypt. And Jeremiah comes back and says, don't go to Egypt. I told you to stay. Stay, till your fields, plant your vineyards, live in your houses, do right. Babylon's gone. They're not coming back. Just stay. But they don't believe that, because that doesn't make any sense. Obviously, Babylon's going to come back. Obviously, it's safer in Egypt. You're lying to us, Jeremiah.
even though they started that chapter saying, whatever the Lord says, we will do, be it good or evil, we agree or not. And they didn't agree, and so they didn't listen. And they went to Egypt, and they took everybody with them because it was the best thing for them. And they show up in Egypt because they thought it was the best place to be. The last 2 weeks, we talked, the title of my lesson was Trusting Our Own Path. Last week I said we spiritualize our own path sometimes. Johanan did exactly what Ishmael did. He just stamped God's name on it instead. But they both made the wrong decision. They both ran to the world for help against the world and both failed in doing so. And things are just getting worse for them. It's the first time they were supposed to just stay and they continue to do what they want. They continue to follow their own wisdom and their own thinking instead of God's wisdom and God's thinking, and they're digging themselves deeper and deeper into a hole. The Bible actually says that that's what we do, and it uses that terminology when we follow ourselves and when we live in sin. I gave you a passage in Psalm chapter 7, and so I want you to look at it. In Psalm chapter 7, it says this, "Behold, he travaileth with iniquity and hath conceived mischief and brought forth falsehood." So when you have iniquity and mischief and falsehood in your life, this is what he describes us as. He made a pit, digged it, and has fallen into the ditch which he made. His mischief shall return upon his own head. His violent dealing shall come down upon his own pate, which is head. So he says, when we live in iniquity, when we live in sin, when we live in mischief, when we live in the lies of this world, we are digging a hole and falling into it. I think of the classic story of Joseph and his brothers. Joseph is hated by his brothers, and they want to get rid of him. They want to kill him, or at least have him out of their lives. The oldest brother convinces them not to kill Joseph, and so while they're thinking of what to do, there's a pit, and they throw Joseph into the pit. And that's one of the first stories you'll learn as a kid in Sunday school. Joseph is in the pit, thrown there by his brothers. But the Bible describes this. When we live according to our own way of thinking, we throw ourselves into our own pit. And we don't think that we are, but we turn around and realize that we're putting ourselves in situations that are making lives more difficult than they need to. And this is what happened with the children of Israel. And so I hope my message will be quick this morning, but I'm going to give you three ways that we can dig ourselves into a hole. When we're going our own way, three aspects of when we're digging ourselves into a hole. And one reason I think we do, because you would think that when we're faced with obvious truth, that we would just admit it and move on with our lives. That would be the most logical thing to do. But I think one of the biggest reasons we don't is because we have this intense desire not to be wrong. Am I the only one in here who has this intense desire not to be wrong? And I think we feel like we need to justify ourselves, and so instead we just keep plowing forward, because to not do that is to backtrack and say, just kidding, I should have done. But we don't want to ever say we should have done something differently. We'll be willing to do a lot of things. A few years ago, I preached a message called Willing to Justify Ourselves. That phrase shows up throughout the New Testament several times when people are interacting with Jesus. Somebody says, what should I do? And Jesus says, well, keep all the law. Love the Lord your God with all your heart. Love your neighbor as yourself. And he's willing to justify himself, said, well, who is my neighbor? He's willing to redefine terms in order to make himself look as good as possible. The Bible even says of the Pharisees, they derided Jesus one time, willing to justify themselves. His message made them look bad, so they had to make Jesus look bad so that they could look good. We will switch truth around and turn it upside down in a desperate attempt to never have to admit that we were wrong. The problem is, whether you like it or not, you're still wrong. And all we do is we dig ourselves deeper into a hole and make our problems worse and worse and worse. And then things don't get any better. We just continue to look more foolish in this desperate attempt to make ourselves look more wise. So we're going to look at a couple things in this story this morning, and I hope I'll be quick. I probably won't be, but I hope that I will be. Number one, we will be extremely short-sighted. Short-sighted. When we try to go our own way and we continue to dig our own spiritual hole, we will be extremely short-sighted. So the beginning of chapter 43 was Johanan's response to Jeremiah's message in chapter 42. His message in chapter 42 was simply this. You want to know what God thinks about your plan to go to Egypt. And I'm going to tell you, God doesn't want you to go to Egypt. If you go there, you're going to be fleeing away from the famine and the sword and the pestilence. You think you are, but you're going to go to it. And the famine and the sword and the pestilence is going to meet you there. Trust me, this is where you'll be okay. That is not where you will be. You'll be fine in Israel. You won't be fine in Egypt. And they go, that's a lie. That doesn't make any sense. Jeremiah, you're not telling us the truth. So they get everybody. They gather them together. They even take Baruch and Jeremiah, and they go to Egypt because it's the best thing for them. This will be right. So there they are, chapter 43. And Jeremiah gives a illustration to them. So I want us to read the rest of chapter 43. It's really short. Verse number 8. Then came the word of the Lord unto Jeremiah in Tapanhes, which is the city of Egypt where they were, saying, take great stones in thine hand, and hide them in the clay in the brick kiln, which is at the entry of Pharaoh's house in Tapanhes, in the sight of the men of Judah. And say unto them, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will send and take Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant, and I will set his throne upon these stones that I have hid, and he shall spread his royal pavilion over them. And when he cometh, he shall smite the land of Egypt and deliver such as are for death to death, and such as are for captivity to captivity, and such as are for the sword to the sword. Now, we saw that same terminology a few chapters ago, basically saying if you're going to go this way, this is what you're going to meet. You're going to meet captivity and sword and famine. And so if you trust your way instead of my way, then you are for sword. You are for captivity. Just like he said in Deuteronomy chapter 30 all this year, we choose death. None of us choose death, but we choose not to obey God. And so we are choosing death instead of choosing life. Same thing here. And he says, so if we're choosing our way, we're choosing sword, we're choosing captivity, we're choosing death. And so if you're for that, then that's what you will get. Verse 12. I will kindle a fire in the houses of the gods of Egypt, and he shall burn them and carry them away captives, and he shall array himself with the land of Egypt as a shepherd putteth on his garment, and he shall go forth from thence in peace. He shall break also the images of Beth Shemesh, which is in the land of Egypt, and the houses of the gods of the Egyptians shall he burn with fire. So a couple different things happen. So what he does with this illustration is he takes great stones and he puts them in the clay in the brick kiln. Now, there's a disagreement about what that phrase means. It's not a textual disagreement. It's just exactly what Jeremiah is trying to come across. Is he talking about a pavement of bricks that he just puts stones on the pavement? Or is he talking about a place to make bricks, which is right in front of the house of Pharaoh? Because maybe there was a renovation in Pharaoh's house. It really doesn't matter. But the illustration still comes across. He puts great stones directly in front of Pharaoh's palace, one way or another. And then he says, very soon, Babylon's throne will sit on these stones. And then he will be in charge of all of Egypt. Now, remember, they're running to Egypt to get away from Babylon because they think that's where they'll be safe. And Babylon won't get them because Egypt is great and powerful. Last time Egypt came, they ran away, so they certainly won't come here. And Jeremiah says, Nebuchadnezzar's going to sit here. He's going to be in charge. He's going to tear down their gods because their gods didn't save them any more than your gods saved you. And he will be in charge, and he will have peace because I have made it to be so. Now, either way, we're not complaining that the people of Israel weren't prophets. Okay, we're not complaining that they couldn't see into the future. They should have known, because there's no way for them to have known that. They were supposed to be listening to Jeremiah. Jeremiah was the prophet communicating to them from the Lord. However, put all the spiritual part of this aside and just think about this logically for a moment. Babylon's taking over the world, all the civilized world in the Mesopotamian area. They're conquering and marching into every major place in that whole region. Egypt is not that far away from Israel. If they had just stopped and thought for 2 seconds, it would have made sense that Babylon's going to show up in Egypt. Of course Babylon's going to show up in Egypt one day. And historically they would. They would come and they would fight against them. Obviously they're going to try to stretch their borders. They haven't been around for that long. They have not lost any of these major campaigns they've gone against. Egypt is a major threat, not that far away from where they've already set up shop. And we're going to walk just down the river and think that suddenly they're all going to go away? That doesn't make any sense. But either way, it doesn't make any sense logically, but Jeremiah already told them that was what was going to happen. But because they were so consumed with their way of seeing things, they couldn't see past next week. They thought, yes, it's fine now, and so it'll be fine forever. And we'll make a lot of very foolish decisions based upon how far we can see down the road. And usually we don't see very far down the road. One of the things I appreciate about the way Pastor designs buildings, he designed the other building that we were at, and major decisions that we make, being on staff here, is that every major decision that we make, and we joke about this, the best way to sell Pastor on a project is if it's versatile. And we say that. He's like, oh, can we do that? Well, it's versatile. He likes versatility. And that's true. When he designed this building, it was very versatile. There's 4 major classrooms in the back of the building, and they all connect to each other, or don't. They can all shut the walls up, or they can all open up. We have used those 4 classrooms in probably every variation that you can think of because of different needs every year in the last 5 years, and that happens during the year, during special events. Now, all the staff guys, we're very one-track mind, and we have something in our mind, and it's going to be great, and it'll be awesome if we do it this way. And then, but the problem is we can't see past that project. Oftentimes we can't see past this year or past the next couple classes or this will be awesome. It'll look great if we do this. And pastor's like, no, but what if? Yeah, but we don't know if that's going to happen. And then next year it does. And we're really glad that we didn't close off all our possibilities. Because pastor, when he comes to buildings especially, he can see down the road and he knows what's coming. He knows what we're probably going to need eventually. The thing is, a lot of us make those kinds of decisions spiritually in our life. This looks great right now, and maybe it'll be fine for the next month and a half. But then once we get past that, things start to fall apart. Think about that's how we often deal with our families. We think very short-sighted with our families. We're having struggles with our family, and our relationship with our kids isn't very much. They don't think that we like them, so what do? We buy them a lot of stuff during Christmas. And their birthday, because then our relationship will grow. But we're not seeing down the road that just buying them a lot of stuff doesn't actually build the relationship, and the prosperity of the fool shall destroy them. See, that's past next month. Yes, they're happy with us today, but they're not down the road. And then we realize we're not spending enough time with them. And we look at our schedule, and we don't have enough time on our schedule. So we stop going to church as often because, I mean, that's where the time is. And so that's fine for this week because, Dad likes me. We went out fishing. We went out shopping. And so it's all great. But we don't see past next month that we're setting them up for a good future if their lives are founded in God's word. And so, yeah, our relationship's great maybe the next couple weeks, but we're not looking down the road. What's that going to do to their lives? We do all kinds of things with that with our family. We want them to have more friends, and so we end up loosening the restrictions on their life so that they can go to more sleepovers or stay out later, and we don't realize what kind of loose living that we're allowing them to have. And so it looks fine right now, they're happy with us, but we're not seeing down the road. Now they're more and more distant from us, so we come back to church hoping that the church people fix them, and now they're not willing to listen, and we don't know why it happened. And we make a lot of decisions that look right for the next 2 weeks, but we don't look in God's word and say, well, God, what is your way of dealing with this? Because he knows what's coming. And so we end up running to Egypt only to get there to meet Babylon. And we're surprised when we do, even though Jeremiah's been telling us the whole time Babylon's coming when you go to Egypt. And so we can't be that short-sighted. The way to not be that short-sighted is to trust that God knows better than we do. That takes us to number 2. We'll be short-sighted, but we will also misrepresent the past. We will misrepresent the past. I gave you a passage in 2 Peter. I didn't read it yet. The Bible says, and I've quoted this to you many times before, the Bible says that when we don't add to our faith what we need to add to it, then it says, then we'll be blind and we cannot see afar off. And have forgotten that we've been purged from our old sins. And so he talks about how we won't be able to see forward or backward. It's like, how can we not see backward? That doesn't make any sense. I understand not seeing forward because we get short-sighted. We don't understand what's going on. We start to think our way instead of God's way. And so we're not anticipating correctly what's going to come around the corner. But how in the world can we not see backward correctly? We've been there. But I don't know. Ask yourself the question. Have you ever misrepresented your past? Have you ever remembered it incorrectly? We always remember ourselves as the hero of most of our stories. Our spouse was always the wrong one, and it was never our fault, whatever it is. We always tend to misrepresent the past anyway, and we can probably all attest to that. But when we are so spiritually willing to justify ourselves, when we look back at what has happened in our life, we will start to look at it incorrectly. In order to make our narrative work, we have to misrepresent what's already happened. And this is exactly what happens in chapter 44. So Jeremiah is basically telling them, listen, you're making the wrong decisions. You need to make the right decisions going forward. And they have to say, no, no, we've been making the right decisions. The only way to do that is to repaint what's been going on. So we're going to look at that in here in just a second. If you have that attendance slip, by the way, when you came in, just put your name on it. Our fellows are coming by with the offering plate. And we'll take that. Just so we know who's here this morning. Let me give you letter A. We misrepresent the past by forgetting past mistakes. Forgetting past mistakes. We conveniently forget the missteps we made so that it doesn't look like a misstep tomorrow, right? Look at how Jeremiah interacts with them. Look at verse number 1. The word that came to Jeremiah concerning all the Jews which dwell in the land of Egypt, which dwell at Migdol and at Tophanes and at Noph, in the country of Pathros, saying, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, ye have seen all the evil that I have brought upon Jerusalem, upon all the cities of Judah. Behold, this day there is desolation, and no man dwelleth therein, because of their wickedness which they have committed to provoke me to anger, and that they went to burn incense and to serve other gods whom they knew not, neither they, ye, nor your fathers. Howbeit, I sent unto you all my servants, the prophets, rising early, sending them, saying, oh, do not this abominable thing that I hate. But they hearken not, nor incline their ear to turn from their wickedness, to burn no incense unto other gods. Wherefore, my fury and mine anger was poured forth and was kindled in the cities of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem, and they are wasted and desolate as at this day. Therefore, now, thus saith the Lord, the God of hosts, the God of Israel, wherefore commit ye this great evil against your souls, to cut off from you man and woman, child and suckling out of Judah, to leave you none to remain, in that ye provoke me unto wrath with the works of your hands, burning incense unto other gods in the land of Egypt, whither ye are gone to dwell, that ye might cut yourselves off, and that ye might be a curse and a reproach among all the nations of the earth. Have ye forgotten the wickedness of your fathers? And the wickedness of the kings of Judah, and the wickedness of their wives, and your own wickedness, and the wickedness of your wives, which they have committed in the land of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem, they are not humbled even unto this day. Neither have they feared, nor walked in my law, nor in my statutes that I set before you and before your fathers. Therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will set my face against you for evil and to cut off all Judah. And I will take the remnant of Judah that have set their faces to go into the land of Egypt to sojourn there, and they shall be consumed and fall in the land of Egypt. They shall even be consumed by the sword and by the famine. They shall die from the least even to the greatest by the sword and by the famine, and they shall be an execration and an astonishment and a curse and a reproach. The same thing he said to them in Jerusalem. For I will punish them that dwell in the land of Egypt as I have punished Jerusalem by the sword, by the famine, by the pestilence, so that none of the remnant of Judah which are gone into the hand of Egypt to sojourn there shall escape or remain, that they should return into the land of Judah to the which they have a desire to return to dwell there. For none shall return for such as shall escape. He basically says this. You lived in Israel. Okay, you were there. You watched how your nation crumbled around you. Literally. You watched as the people continued to make bad decisions. And you know they were bad decisions because I told you they were bad decisions. The prophets told you what was going to happen because they were bad decisions. And in order to justify knowing that they were correct, all the things I told you would happen did. There's no way around this narrative. You were there. You watched your fathers do it. You watched yourselves do it. And it didn't go well. So where do you get off turning around tomorrow and doing the same thing in a different place? What makes you think it's going to go better this time? But we always remember the past however we want to. Have you forgotten all the wickedness of you, your fathers, their wives, the kings, their wives, yourselves, your own wives? Have you forgotten all of that? Where did all that go? I thought we were on the same page now. But no. Have you ever done something and decided while you were doing it you would never do it again? Like when you went to that buffet, right? And while you're finishing your last plate, you're thinking, I don't think I'm going to eat for 3 weeks. And I'm certainly never going to come back here because I feel gross and disgusting. But next time you have a good special event, you and your anniversary, you and your wife, where are you going to go? You're going to go to that buffet. It sounds like a great day, great idea this week because you're not sitting there full and feeling gross and disgusting. Or you hiked to the top of that mountain and got to the bottom and told your wife, I am never doing that again. And then your kid tugs on your jacket next week and says, hey, can we go hiking? Sure, let's go up to the mountain. And we continue to do that because when we're not in the situation, it always seems less bad. We can always remember it a little better than it is. And spiritually, we do that ourselves. We have made bad decisions that have had bad consequences for ourselves and for people around us. And in the moment, we looked at our lives and said, I am never doing that again. But 2 weeks from now, when things are fine and you're not arguing with your spouse and things are fine at work and everything's going smoothly today, it doesn't seem as bad of a decision right now. Why? Because we're stupid. That's why. There's no other reason why. We were there. How could we possibly remember the past wrong? We were there with it, and yet we do, don't we? We get to the other end of it, and we look back and say, well, that wasn't so bad. I think it's because we build spiritual habits. We naturally respond to certain things in certain ways. We all have some kind of habits. How many of you driven home and didn't remember driving there? You pulled in your driveway, and you're like, I thought I was still at work. Here I am. You were thinking about something, the project you had coming up, and you just arrived at your house because you know how to go there. You didn't have to think about the turns. You didn't have to think about the light. You didn't think about the stop sign. You just drove into your driveway. You've been there a million times. That's just what you did. We all have a lot of bad habits, too. One of my bad habits is I chew on my fingernails, especially when I think, which is bad because I end up writing and reading a lot. And so I come home and Sam says, why are your fingers bleeding? Well, I had to write a sermon today. And that's a bad habit. But watch, I don't even notice that I do it. I just noticed that I had done it. We have spiritual bad habits too. We naturally respond to certain situations with anger and frustration, like traffic. That's how we naturally respond. There's traffic, you're expecting traffic, but you're still mad at the traffic anyway. We naturally respond with lust. We naturally respond with envy. We naturally respond with fear. And so we've done that for so many years, and it's hurt us along the way, but we naturally do it this time, and we want to tell ourselves it's not going to be bad the next time we do it. These people, here they are sitting in Egypt, and Jeremiah says, I'm sorry, where have you been? And we're all reading this thinking, yeah, where have they been? But if we look at our own lives, maybe we can ask ourselves, where have we been with all the bad decisions we've made and all the consequences God's given you, all the lessons he tried to teach us and all the lessons that we tend to ignore? We misrepresent the past by forgetting the past mistakes. And we also, in tandem with that, letter B, we romanticize a past life. So we take the bad and we try to push it aside as not so bad. And we take the things that fit what we're trying to believe, and we make it seem better than it really was. Now, you're not going to believe that they actually think what they think in the next couple verses. but it's going to be here. So, verse 15, Jeremiah tells them all that. Look at how they respond. Verse 15 of chapter 44. Then all the men which knew that their wives had burned incense unto other gods, all the women that stood by, a great multitude, even all the people that dwelt in the land of Egypt and Pathros, answered Jeremiah, saying, as for the word that thou hast spoken unto us in the name of the Lord, we will not hearken unto thee. Well, at least they're honest, right? Most people, they say they're going to nod, they nod their heads in church and they go home and do whatever they want anyway. At least they said, no. At least they were honest and open with what they were thinking. This is their response, verse 17. But we will certainly do whatsoever thing goeth forth out of our own mouth to burn incense unto the queen of heaven, which would have been Ashtaroth, by the way, and to pour out drink offerings unto her, as we have done, we and our fathers, our kings, and our princes, in the city of Judah, in the streets of Jerusalem. For then had we plenty of victuals, and were well, and saw no evil. So we're going to go, and we're going to worship our own God. Because in the past, when that's what we did, everything was fine. And since we started worshiping God, everything's been terrible. I'm sorry, you haven't started worshiping God yet. Remember 2 seconds ago, he says, everyone who went into captivity, they're still not listening to me. And neither are you. So we don't have a good representation of that yet. But here they say, back when we worshiped Ashtaroth, everything was fine. We had plenty of victuals, things were well, and we saw no evil. If anything could describe the recent history of Israel, it is not those three things. They did not have plenty of victuals, things were not well, and they saw a lot of evil. I don't know where they've been. Are you talking back like a few generations ago when Assyria showed up and basically took all of Judah away and you just had the little bit of land right around Jerusalem? Are you talking about then? Or are you talking about just a couple generations later when Josiah was king and he went and fought with Egypt and Egypt killed him and you put a new king in charge and Egypt took him captive and took him down to Egypt and he died there. He put a new king in charge and changed his name and then he taxed you. Are you talking about then? Or are you talking about when Babylon showed up and they took all of your people that actually knew how to do stuff, that knew how to add any leadership, or that had any riches, and they took your temple, they took all of your gold, and they broke all your buildings down. Are you talking about then? Which one of those stories did you have plenty of food, everything was well, and you saw no evil? How is this your remembrance of the past? But you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of Israel coming out of Egypt the first time. Remember this? They're barely out of Egypt, like barely. Like they haven't even gotten to Mount Sinai yet. So we're at the story in between they crossed the Red Sea the first time and before they actually get to Mount Sinai and they're hungry and they don't have any food. God brought us in the desert to die. Yes, 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 that's what he did. That was the grand plan. We're going to bring you out into the desert and kill you all. That was the plan. Yes, Israel, you got him. Well, he brings them there, and this is how they represent their time in Egypt. I gave it to you. Look down on it. This is how the Israelites saw the past. Exodus 16. The whole congregation, the children of Israel, murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. The children of Israel said unto them, would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, and when we did eat bread to the full. You brought us forth into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. Where you sat by the flesh pots and ate bread to the full, is that what you remember happening when you were enslaved to Egypt, when you built all their buildings, when God says all the way back in chapter 3 that your cry reached unto heaven? So when you were crying and moaning and plaining and groaning that you were in slavery to Egypt, this is your remembrance of it? But watch how foolish we will be when we want to be right and we want to do our own thing. We will paint the past however it needs to be painted in order to make us look right in the present. Well, when we served Ashtaroth, everything was well. No, it wasn't. And when you served the world in the past, things were not well. Don't look into your past and act like it was. That's what Satan will convince us of and deceive us into thinking that the time when we were enslaved to sin and the agony and the misery and the conflict that we brought into our lives that was so real and it was so vivid when we were in it was actually a time of good and plenty. I should just go back there. And we forget about the problems that we brought into ourselves. As long as we can get rid of that, then we can live as we please in the present. Letter C. So with those two things in place, what else do we do? We misdiagnose the past problems. Okay, so I wouldn't be surprised that this is how they think next. It doesn't make it less ridiculous, but I'm not surprised now. They look into their past and they said they forgot all the idolatry that brought all the problems. They remembered idolatry as if it brought them good things instead of problems. And so what was the problem that they need to fix? They need to go back to their idols. Look at verse number 18. So when they worshiped Ashtaroth, they had good and plenty. Verse 18. But since we left off to burn incense to the queen of heaven, to pour out drink offerings unto her, we have wanted all things and have been consumed by the sword and by the famine. And when we burned incense to the queen of heaven and poured out drink offerings unto her, did we make her cakes to worship her and pour out drink offerings unto her without our men? So here they are, they're saying, when we stopped worshiping Ashtaroth, that's when everything went downhill. Man, we weren't as faithful, and then everything started to go bad. So we need to get back to that. And so their representation of the past was they needed to go back to the world as quickly as possible. Jeremiah, of course, responds. Look at verse 20. Jeremiah said unto all the people, to the men, to the women, to all the people which had given him that answer, saying, the incense that ye burned in the cities of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem, ye, your fathers, your kings, your princes, and the people of the land, did not the Lord remember them, and came it not into his mind? So the Lord could no longer bear because of the evil of your doings and because of the abominations which ye've committed. Therefore is your land a desolation, an astonishment and a curse, without an inhabitant as at this day. Because ye have burned incense and because ye have sinned against the Lord, and have not obeyed the voice of the Lord, nor walked in his law, nor in his statutes, nor in his testimonies. Therefore this evil has happened unto you as at this day. Conflict and worldview. The problem was we stopped worshiping the world enough. And Jeremiah says, no. The problem was you stopped worshiping God correctly, and that's where all your problems came from. And so one way or another, they're going to have to learn it. And this is how we treat our issues in our life. We can't handle our lives, so what do? We run to the world. We need drugs. We need alcohol in order to escape. Or we just need other distractions. We need TV. We need video games in order to escape. That's what we need. That's what we're lacking. Well, my family is falling apart, so we need to take more trips together. I need to buy them more things. My marriage is falling apart. I need to make more money. What's wrong with my life? Well, what I need is I need more of the idols of this world. That's what I need. Because if I have more of the idols of this world, then everything will be fixed. It was when I stopped having as much of the idols of this world that things started falling apart. When I stopped having the stuff, when I stopped having the distraction, when I stopped having all the money, that was when things went sour. That's not our issue. Our issue is the spiritual state of our hearts and our relationships. But that's how we'll think. Things go sour, and we blame that we don't have enough idolatry. And lest we think we're in a completely different world, we end up thinking a lot more similarly to Israel than we believe that we do. And that takes me to my last point, which is hardly a point, but more of a conclusion. We will find out that God was right too late. When we go down our own path and continue to dig our own hole, we will find out that God is right. But many of us will do it too late. So let's finish the chapter. Look at verse 24. So he says to them after completing all that, moreover, Jeremiah said unto all the people, to the women, hear the word of the Lord, all Judah that are in the land of Egypt. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, saying, ye and your wives have both spoken with your mouths and fulfilled with your hand, saying, we will surely perform our vows that we vowed to burn incense to the Queen of Heaven, to pour out drink offerings unto her. Ye will surely accomplish your vows and surely perform your vows. Therefore hear ye the word of the Lord, all Judah that dwell in the land of Egypt. Behold, I have sworn by my name, saith the Lord, that my name shall no more be named in the mouth of any man of Judah in all the land of Egypt, saying, the Lord God liveth. Behold, I will watch over them for evil and not for good. All the men of Judah that were in the land of Egypt shall be consumed by the sword and by the famine until there be an end of them. A small number that escape the sword shall return out of the land of Egypt into the land of Judah. And all the remnant of Judah that are gone into the land of Egypt to sojourn there shall know whose words shall stand, mine or theirs. And this shall be a sign unto you, saith the Lord, that I'll punish you in this place, that ye may know that my words shall surely stand against you for evil. Thus saith the Lord, behold, I will give Pharaoh Hophra, king of Egypt, into the hand of his enemies, and into the hand of them that seek his life, as I gave Zedekiah, king of Judah, into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, his enemy, and that sought his life. Idolatry was not the answer. And they'll learn that. I mean, this is a fair end. You say that it's because you left me, or you say it's because you left the world. I say it's because you left me. So, if you keep worshiping and fulfilling all your vows to Ashtaroth, if you are right, then your future will be bright. But if you're not, then it won't be. And you will see that one way or another. And that's exactly what God says. And in that day, they will see whose word shall stand, mine or theirs. And we will all have that moment in our life. We will either agree with God or we will disagree with God. Either we will obey him and trust that his word knows better than we do, or we will not, and we will trust that our word knows better than his. But either decision we make, we will know that God is right. And either we will have agreed with him before, or we will agree with him after. But we can either agree with him now or later and experience the blessings that he has by just obeying what he tells us to do. Jeremiah is just a frustrating book because it doesn't matter what situation you put them in, they trust themselves more than God. Sometimes they're supposed to flee. Sometimes they're supposed to surrender to Babylon. Sometimes they're supposed to just worship and throw away their idols. Sometimes they're supposed to stay and not go to Egypt. But whatever the situation is that they're put in, they say, no, I know better. And we do that ourselves. And we only bring grief into our life that need not be there. And we dig ourselves into a hole that we didn't need to dig. And we could experience the blessings of God, but we don't because we're too busy trusting ourselves on our own path. Instead of trusting that God is right. And that's the end of that little Egypt saga. They had all kinds of potential at the beginning of it. Stay, plant your fields, harvest your vineyards, live in the houses, just move forward from here. And they said, no, we're going to do it our way. And things went downhill really fast. And it will for us too.